Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday. We're crawling towards the end of the week. Another USC football game. It's time a road contest against the Arizona State Sun Devils. And as always, we love to talk with Keely. Your follow on Twitter at Keely is my name, or follow all of her work on USCFootball.com. But we're going to add a little special guest. I think we had Bruce Feldman on a couple weeks ago during the bye week. We've had people asking for this, Keely. Well, anyway, welcome in, Keely. How are you?
Hello, hello. I'm doing well. I'm excited for today's episode, as you can tell.
I'm excited, too. I'm not even sure how to do the introduction, but this is like the old time's sake. We have Dan Weber.
Ta-da!
Dan is back on the pod. This is the Dan pod. We would always call it the Dan pod. And Dan is back calling from the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area. Dan, how you doing, sir?
Doing great. Doing great. Although, it's way dark here already, so unfortunately, I don't know that I've ever done a podcast in the dark, now that I think about it. This is a little bit of an adjustment.
We're doing this at, we're like 4:15 p.m. Pacific, but you are on Eastern time, and I hate the dark when it's getting dark early. Like, I'm doing my early workouts, and we're gonna put the clocks ahead. We're gonna be in Tempe this weekend. And Arizona will be on the same time zone as California, but when we fly home, it will be on a different time zone.
Wow. So
after last road trip where we were at Notre Dame, where you're like at the game and it's the Eastern time zone, then you drive back to Chicago. So we've had some time zone travel issues with our road games lately, Dan.
Yeah, and then you're in Indiana. It doesn't change time, but then Northwest Indiana doesn't consider itself part of Indiana, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just it's kind of a mess. And one big difference it hit me again when I moved back is in Cincinnati, you're on the same time zone as the Eastern coast. So, you know, New York and Maine and Florida, and then you come all the way out here to the Midwest, and I'm still on Eastern time. So the good news was we could play softball till, 9 o'clock at night because it stayed, light dark longer on the far western end. And then you would get to, when I was in California, you realize the Pacific time zone is very narrow. So if you're in L.A., it gets dark a lot sooner because, that time zone is so narrow. So I had no idea because it's, it's sunny and bright and all that. And then all of a sudden it's dark and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, the fact that
much different time zone. The Eastern time zone is much, much deeper. Than the Pacific, and it takes some getting used to.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, Bangor, Maine, and Cincinnati have the same time zone, I mean, those are pretty far apart. Like, you're letting you're the bouncer at the club, Keely. You're letting a lot of different people in. Like, there's just like there's a wide range there.
And
on the West Coast, it's pretty limited. We're keeping it tight. You better collared shirt and nice shoes. You got to get in there. All right. I don't know. We got off the rails already.
It's a classic damn fun.
Yeah,
love
that's
it.
Perfect.
I love it.
So yeah. If you have any comments or questions for the show, podcast at uscfootball.com. You can also call or text us at 424-254-9141. If you are on the Apple Podcasting app, we do appreciate a 5-star review. That always really helps grow the show. And we're giving away Trader Joe's gift cards, $50 to Trader Joe's to the best review we get each week. I guess we got a couple more this week, Keely.
Yeah, we have two, and both of them are pretty good. It's from first one is from Daniel from Santa Barbara, who gave us 5 stars and said the best USC football podcast. Look no further. This is the best podcast if you want insight into all things USC football. Ryan, Keely, and team are all wonderful. This podcast has it all. You get an inside look into how the team is performing, weekly practice reports, previews, and expectations for upcoming games. They take questions from listeners and provide candid reaction to games played and where the team should be moving forward. I also really enjoy when they have guest speakers. If you need one more reason to listen, Trader Joe's is a sponsor. Ryan gives you a quick Fearless Flyer update, which is always appreciated and can make your mouth water. Fight on, Daniel from Santa Barbara. And then we had one more from Lambert JH, who said, the subject of the review is, can your podcast host do all of the following with a 5-star review? Share insights on Trojan baseball's outfield depth and have long hair. Give insider info while herding cats, aka the other podcast hosts. Or make food analogies while constantly thinking about his next vacation. I don't think so. Listen to this podcast with the same intensity you would have used to fire off a Helton needs to go response to a careful tweet about marine biology research.
All right, I think that's our winner.
That's our winner. It's amazing.
Who is that one?
Lambert, I believe.
Lambert. All right, so send me an email, ryan@uscfootball.com, and with your address, your physical address. I will snail mail you a $50 gift card to Trader Joe's. And I know, Dan, it's coming around your time of year for Trader Joe's, the corn pudding and
corn
everything.
Pudding.
I went there the other day.
Well, talk about my time of year with Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's has just opened their first ever Northern Kentucky Trader Joe's.
Nice.
Look at that.
Did you have influence on that?
Like 6 weeks ago. Oh, it's fabulous. Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure you had some influence. I know. You know people high up there. I know.
But yeah, I mean, Basselin said that they were looking for another location in Greater Cincinnati, and I said, you got to come to Northern Kentucky, and darned if he didn't.
Yeah,
they did.
For anyone, that's the president of Trader Joe's. Dan just name dropping.
Casually name dropped.
very nice, Dan. I know. I went there the other day. Those little ciabatta rolls are really good. So I went there and I bought the. I make like pasta sauce. So I had some pasta sauce frozen. I came out and thawed it. But I bought the spinach tortellini that's in the refrigerator section. So I love getting like the fresher pasta like that. So I cooked that up and I put my sauce in there. And I took the ciabatta bread, cut it in half, and I put butter and garlic and a little bit of parsley on top. And I just put them in the broiler and I made little garlic bread out of it and
nice.
Stuff. So it was cool. Yeah. So I took a picture and put it on Instagram. I was like, this is my little Trader Joe's dinner last night. So
it was like dinner for one.
It was dinner for one. Yes.
That was your caption.
I was by myself. I'm like, I'm going to make myself a nice little dinner here. So it was good. But glad you got your Trader Joe's in Northern Kentucky, Dan.
Yes. I'm really excited about the corn pudding. Okay. I'm just getting ready for the holidays and I may buy a case. They had peaches in little cases, and they were just, we just kept going out and buying more and more of them. So they did a really nice. They just have a wonderful workforce. I mean, it's just the same kind of people that you got used to in California. It's like they hired the same people in Northern Kentucky, and they're happy as heck to see you there, and really helpful. I could not be more pleased that they're here.
Good to hear, Dan. All right. Well, we got a lot of questions to get to. We have some news to get to. We have to preview USC's matchup with Arizona State. So we're going to talk about all that. But we have some breaking news to go with. And we're going to get – it's going to be great. I'm so happy Dan's on here because we got to get his opinion on all these things. But the second job in FBS football to open after UConn was USC. USC fired Clay Helton after the Stanford game, week two, way back in early September. The third job to open was Georgia Southern, out of the Sun Belt. They run the triple option, former FCS school. They won like 6 FCS national championships. They actually had their last 3 seasons were great. They move on. Well, there's been a marriage between those 2 schools. Clay Helton, reportedly for $800,000 a year. Helps USC out a little bit with their buyout, but he's going to be the new head coach at Georgia Southern. They're putting out billboards. It's pretty crazy, the kind of hype that's going on around it. There's a lot of hyperbole, a lot of things being said about Clay Helton that make some USC fans kind of cringe a little bit. But I love the fact that we got Dan on here because we first want to get your thoughts on that Stanford, following the Stanford game, Clay Helton being fired. We actually got you on to write columns now once a week. So we didn't line it up because Clay Helton got fired to do columns like that. And then get your thoughts on him being hired by Georgia Southern. But maybe whatever you want to start, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the timing was such that I think I wrote my first column on Sunday saying they had to fire Clay and they fired him on Monday. So it was like,
You're a big deal.
Unusual timing, but it surprises me in some ways because Georgia Southern was, I mean, they played physical football. Georgia Southern was a, they were a bunch of tough guys. They had a former University of Georgia top assistant named Irk Russell, who was a tough guy, and he taught tough guy football. And that's what they played in South Georgia. And they could line up, you know, even when they were winning the, you know, national championships at you know, 1AA, they could line up with a lot of people. Clay just seems so not their type in terms of physical football. But I guess it really helps to have the super agent as your agent, who, you know, Jimmy Sexton, who can basically, I think, I don't know if he can hire and fire coaches all over the place, but he's got an awful lot of power in terms of, you know, making things happen. And if he's got a client who needs a job, I think, you know, it's a probably a pretty good move to have Jimmy Sexton behind the scenes kind of pulling the strings, which, you know, and everybody looked at the fact that James Franklin switched over, you know, to Jimmy Sexton as his agent, which, you know, probably gives you more ability to adjust to maybe a job that you didn't expect to open up, opens up, let's say the Florida job or whatever opens up. So, you know, as far as it just doesn't seem like a fit in terms of coaching style, for Clay, but I mean, if you're Georgia Southern and you can hire the coach from the University of Southern California who, you know, won a Pac-12 and won the Rose Bowl and a, you know, great Rose Bowl and things like that, you know, and can take credit for Sam Darnold, however USC people, you know, think about what happened with Clay and Sam Darnold, you can create a story line that maybe the, you know, the people at, you know, Georgia Southern are going to say, hey, this is pretty cool. But I would not expect anyone who is familiar with from the USC point of view to think, gee, that's probably a good move for them. it's surprising in one way it's not. Considering you know, all the things that are going on, I don't know, you know, if somebody needed, I mean, you wouldn't probably want to be a coach who's on the edge of the firing line if Jimmy Sexton had a coach who needed a job at your school. You probably might want to be real nervous about that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's definitely a strange situation. I mean, Clay Helton had a huge buyout, didn't need to work. You know, one of the first coaches to take a job. It's a good, you know, situation for Georgia Southern where you can get somebody in there. They have the interim coach going now, but he can assemble his staff, get the recruiting and stuff going. But they're not going to be, I mean, if he wants to run the triple option, he's going to have to hire some, I mean, he doesn't have experience in that. Their roster is set up for the triple option. And this was a team that, they, I mean, it's a pretty good job they've had. There's, you know, there's fairly high expectations for a place like Georgia Southern just because they have been able to win. They've fallen off this year. They really turned, I forget the coach's name, but they fired him fairly quickly after like a 1-3 start. But you look around, like Billy Napier is a big name in there. I mean, you're like Coastal Carolina, Louisiana, like teams that have beaten good teams, you know, group. This is a group of five league that's beaten power five teams. And Butch Jones is in there, Appalachian State. Like there's, this is not going to be like you take over a crushing program that's just going to dominate this league. You have to rebuild a program that's, you know, was doing well in the league and isn't anymore. And there's some teams in the league that are doing really well. So this is, I mean, if he does well there, you got to give Craig Clayton a lot of credit because this does not look like some kind of easy fix.
No, and I would think the whole state of Georgia, you know, based on what's happening with the University of Georgia, and you know, completely kind of at the other end of the state is doing, is kind of raising expectations, you know, in the state of Georgia. And the one big advantage that Georgia's always had is it's unlike Mississippi and Alabama, where you have, you know, two SEC teams, or Tennessee. There's only one, you know, only one SEC team in the state of Georgia, in one of the states with, you know, that produces a whole lot of, you know, college football prospects. So, yeah, they're not, it's not going to be a place where the expectations kind of drop off. And as you mentioned, some of those coaches, there's some really good coaches at that level of college football now, all over the place. And so, you know, you're not going to just go in there based on your name or the fact that you used to coach at USC and be able to, you know, just say, look, you know, I'm above the rest of these guys. There's some really good coaches.
Yeah, I mean, like, hey, you got Tennessee's former coach, you know, and stuff like that going there. Billy Napier, you know, ASU, former ASU offensive coordinator. Keeley, what were your thoughts when you heard about this?
I thought it was pretty soon. You know, I thought that maybe he would take some time to, you know, just sit back and evaluate everything. You know, he was at USC for so long. I thought that maybe he would just kind of wait a little bit, you know, but the quick turnaround, maybe it's because given his reputation and how things ended, maybe he felt like if he waited longer, he would be dead in the water or maybe there wouldn't be a lot of interest. I don't know. But I thought there would at least be more time. Like there would at least, the season would at least end before he gets a new job. So I thought this was a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it might have been in, at least in the, not necessarily in the works, but in somebody's mind that, you know, kind of an insurance policy, where would you go if, which makes you really second guess the wisdom of bringing Clay back this year for, you know, what, three games? I'm trying to remember.
Three
games? Two. That's right. Yeah. Why would you do that? You know, I mean, that really, that whole, when you think of what you could have done between the end of, you know, last year and this year, and to lose all of that time, and now, you know, Georgia Southern has a coach before USC does. The wisdom of bringing Clay back, I think that really makes the case for that was not a good idea.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. Drake.
Well, can I just jump in? Sorry, I have a question for Dan.
Oh, yeah.
Dan, you've seen so much USC football over the years. I'm just curious your thoughts of seeing this team play this season. What are you thinking about this?
I don't know what I'm looking at. I see guys that don't know. I mean, I look at stances and I think, where did that come from? Who's teaching them, you know, getting stances like that? I'm thinking, do they really know what they're doing? I think body language really is important in football. And they just look like they're all over the place. It's like they're not all kind of on the same page. And you realize when you watch them, you think, you know, there have been a lot of, and I don't want to, you know, say it in a way that, you know, where you're putting the players down, but you look at certain position groups and you think, whoa, what happened between the time those kids were recruited and the time and now in terms of, you know, this is still a team that, you know, technically, if you add the numbers up, was number 10 in the nation in terms of recruited talent going into this season. But they don't look any way near, you know, a top 10 team. In terms of talent, and you know, there are you know, more players at some positions and other positions were, you know, both lines were under recruited for enough years, you know, where they're, you know, they've got all kinds of trouble. And you watch, for example, you watch them in games where they couldn't run the ball, and then you watch them and you think, wait a minute, Ingram, that kid can run. I mean, and you know, they're getting enough out of the, you know, the three veterans, you know, center and the two guards, that they're able to run the ball. But did they not know they could run the ball? And it's just frustrating, I think, to watch. They don't exactly look prepared. That the penalty situation hasn't gotten even remotely better. The celebrations seem still, you know, as great as they were. And, you know, you look and you think, what are they celebrating? You know, why is that? And you saw, I just thought kids were trying to do in some ways too much. And every time after about the first four games, I'm thinking every time Drake London, you know, caught the ball, I'm thinking he's going to try to, you know, do this or do that or whatever. He's trying so hard. He's just, I mean, he was, you know, remarkable. I mean, I don't know that I've seen a player kind of like it, maybe Mike Williams a little bit, that, you know, was just going to take the team on his back. I mean, you just don't see wide receivers who are the toughest guy on the team. I mean, that's just almost, I don't know. Again, was that Mike Williams? There was a whole lot of tough guys when he played. But when you're, you know, toughest guy is your wide receiver, you think, oh, why would that be? How is that? And I think what you realized was year after year after year after year of not doing things right and completely right and not understanding how you win football games, this catches up with you. I mean, be honest, I like the and talking to every one of the assistant coaches except the very newest guys from this past year. I liked them a lot and thought, okay, they can't not be better with these guys. And then you watch them and you think, man, it doesn't look like they've had anywhere near the impact you thought they would have. And, you know, you just realize you can't hire around a head coach who's not capable of getting the job done. There's nothing you can do. And that's your job, is to make that decision, and probably should have been made a couple of years ago. And then you go from there. But there's nothing you can do if you don't have, you know, the right guy. And there aren't that many guys that are really, really, really good coaches. And a program like USC demands a good coach. If USC has a really, really good coach, they'll win national championships. If not, they're going to be pretty ugly. And that's been their history, the history of USC all the way through. And so you can't just get by. You can't just, so maybe we'll make do or whatever. No, you have to have a guy who's capable of winning national championships. There are some programs, that's the only level of coach that you're allowed to have. And if you don't have it, you're doing it wrong. And USC has been willing not to do it right. And this is the penalty that you pay. For example, I was just thinking the rest of the year. There's four games to go. Who has any idea? They could win four. They could lose four.
Yeah.
They could win the two on the road. They could lose the two at home. I mean, who knows? Who has any clue? You have no idea. I don't know how, you know, Las Vegas, you know, would handicap USC. I mean, it's just, there's just no way you can know. And it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's tough. And,
that's kind of my take.
Yeah, we're going to get into the ASU preview in a little bit because they're another team. They're just like, I don't know. But one of the mainstays for USC, you mentioned Drake London. And just so you know, we talked about this with Harvey Hyde on Monday. We found out on Sunday following the game that he broke his ankle, fractured his ankle, and he's going to be out for the season. We did get to see him on the sidelines. In the second half, he came out in a cart and had crutches and stuff. He's been out to practice a little bit this week, but just a bummer. I mean, I get your thoughts on that, Dan, just losing a player like that, of that caliber, just someone that stood out. The USC's had a lot of great receivers. He just stood out.
He was so, you know, the heart of that team. I mean, he was so the leader in every way you can be a leader. It's just pretty amazing. I mean, it's so rare for a kid who comes in as a dual sport star, and the second sport is basketball, to have the physicality that he had and the fearlessness. And I mean, he's rare. I mean, there have been very few wide receivers in recent college football history like him. I mean, I don't know that I can come up with, you know, and say, oh, that guy. No, I mean, I don't think I can. He was that, you know, one of a kind, and it's just amazing. Will it cost him, or will people just say, you know, he deserves the Biletnikoff? We're going to give it to him anyway. you know, not his fault that he, you know, he broke his ankle. But I'll be really interested in seeing, you know, his numbers will be compatible, you know, comparable after, you know, the 7 games or whatever, and everybody else is 12. So I would love to see him, you know, the people with the Biletnikoff Award just say the heck with, he didn't get to finish out the season. He was the best receiver in the country, and he was. I mean, he runs patterns so perfectly. I mean, that he, you know, there's not a, you know, a 50, there's no such thing as a 50-50 ball if it's thrown to him. I mean, he's, you know, I know that guys at the game the other day were saying 80-20 or whatever it is. He's, he showed me more. I don't think I knew he was that good. I thought he was very, very good, but he fooled me. He's sensational. I mean, he's got that, that speed that is deceptive. I mean, I don't know, you know, where his top 40 time is going to be, but he's got enough speed, that he can create separation. And unfortunately with this offense, they don't create as much separation as you'd like, to see, the way they run the air raid. But, and you know, you hopefully that, I mean, since it's not a knee, you're hoping that, that doesn't, make the NFL scouts get a little nervous and all that. You never want to bet on how smart the NFL scouts are going to be. but, I mean, you know, that's kind of a bad bet, but hopefully, and you know, I saw that they think he's ready. He'll be ready for the combine and all that. He'll be, I would guess, going into the combine, he will be the number one person that everybody at the combine will be there to watch, and which will probably be a good thing. I mean, it's really a shame, and how they're going to react to having him only on the sideline, I don't know. I mean, it didn't look like, as much as he did personally, I didn't get the sense that he was able to kind of bring the rest of them with him. I mean, I thought they were, you know, they loved watching him.
Yeah.
I
only scored 6 points after the half. So that's not a, you know, since his injury, they scored 6 points. That wasn't good. And it's funny, Shotgun's pointed out. Shotgun pointed out that he led the nation in contested catches, and it was like 6 above everybody else, something like that. I don't know if you've updated the numbers, but that's one of those, like, he's, you know, he was leading a lot of categories. That's going to go by the wayside after people catch up. But that contested catches thing might last for the end of the season just because he had so many. On there. And that's not always a good thing about the offense. You're like, your best receiver has to make the most contested catches.
Is because that a scheme thing?
Yeah, because he's not open a lot, but he still makes a catch. Other people don't have that chance because they're like, they're schemed open, and he's not. So, but that might hold. He might have the most by the end of the season.
It's not a feature. It's a bug, or it's not the other way around of the offense. You know, I mean, that's just the way the offense is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, let's look over.
Yeah, he.
Okay, we'll go over to Arizona State. We're going to talk about that a little bit, get your thoughts there. But this is some breaking news that just happened. And it's funny, I had a fan on Twitter. We tweeted out like our Tunnel Vision show and that we're going to preview the game. And he's like, I'll give you a preview. Arizona State's like well-coached and buttoned down, something like that. And I was like, okay, you have not watched Arizona State. They got outscored their last 2 games 56-0 over a stretch. It was pretty bad, and Pete Thamel tweeted out that things are spiraling at Arizona State. So former player and sideline reporter Jordan Simone, I believe that's how you pronounce it, was fired. He's their radio sideline reporter. So it'd sort of be like, I don't know, if Sean Cody or Sua Cravens, but I guess Jordan Moore is the sideline reporter. But this is a former Arizona State safety who's been doing the radio broadcast. He tweeted out, I'm sad to announce I've been let go from the Arizona State radio broadcast for some comments I made on a Sun Devils podcast. It was a Son of the Devils podcast. I have nothing but love for the football program, the university. I'm as proud of a Sun Devil as you're going to find, and I will miss my time on the sidelines. And Thamel quoted some of the things he said as, these players don't even realize that they're being coached so poorly, and also they've been coached out of a championship. So he's the sideline reporter. I mean, it's not his full-time job. He just does that, you know, once a week, gets a small paycheck from the university, I'm assuming, and goes on a podcast and tells them, like, hey, you know, the players aren't getting great coaching, and they fire him. That's a pretty bad one. I want to get your thoughts on that, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if I were the university, I would think, boy, thank you for saying that, because we're going to have to make a big decision here. And it probably would bolster the decision we're going to have to make. I mean, between the NCAA investigation and you know, their approach to NCAA recruiting rules, which was, what? There are recruiting rules? Who knew? You know, that I would think Arizona State, that would be the, you know, on page 7 of the things to do to get the program, you know, squared away. And it would be the kind of thing that even if you wanted to do it, somebody in the program should say, no, this is going to look terrible. Don't do it. You know, we're bigger than this. We can handle some, you know, criticism and call the guy in and say, okay, what do we need to do to have you not ripping the coaches in the podcast or the whatever, the interview, and not focus on it. I mean, that's the absolute least of their problems, obviously. But I've been surprised that they've been able to hold it together as long as they were. I would have thought it would have come sooner than this, the way the whole thing was being put together. I mean, they were like not exactly – I mean, it was like in a different world. They were not exactly a – you know, your college football program that you kind of, this is how you do it. They didn't ever do it that way. And it always seemed like it was just a matter of time. And then for some reason, I guess part of that is you're in the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 is a different sort of a place. And who knows, you know, you can say, well, you got really bad problems. And then you say, yeah, but look at all those guys. Look at all the problems they got.
Yeah. People point out USC's problems.
In the Pac-12, you could kind of survive thanks to other people's problems.
Yeah.
It's caught up with Arizona State at this point. Who knows? I don't know. Does that mean anything for this weekend? I have no idea.
It's hard to tell because I've been saying this from the very beginning, Dan, that you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop with ASU because they had to suspend three – assistant coaches. Now, nothing really else has come of that. There haven't been a lot of interviews or anything with the coaches and stuff yet. But that halftime, if you remember 3 weeks ago, Arizona State's undefeated in the Pac-12. They have a 21-7 lead on Utah at halftime. And they're looking like they're going to cruise and be the Pac-12 South champions. And then from that point, like from that moment, they get outscored 56-0. They get run out of the field by Utah. Washington State turns them over on the very first three possessions of the next game. They lose by double digits to Washington State. And now they're reeling. And now you fire your sideline coach, I mean, your sideline reporter. And we had Sua Cravens on our Tunnel Vision show early on, and he said some critical things. I mean, I don't think, you know, he said some things. It was after the Stanford game, I believe. You know, and you're not fixing anything by saying, hey, we're going to let our sideline reporter go. Like someone that bleeds – Sun Devil, he's just a Sun Devil through and through. You're going to fire that guy because he's being kind of critical. That just doesn't make much sense. Keely, did you have any thoughts on that one? Or just like, I mean, it's not a good sign, right?
No, I mean, but it's par for the course. A dysfunctional athletic department is making weird moves. I mean, you know, it's kind of just, it makes sense. Now, and like you guys said, I thought Herm would be gone earlier. So I don't know. We'll see.
He's still there. I can't imagine him being back in 2022. But
no, I mean, he made comments after the loss on Saturday that he basically said it's the players. And it's like, how, if everything's melting down, how are you then putting it on the players? Like, maybe he really believes that, but that's just not great for team morale, I would think.
No.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dan?
So that's where you drop a little note to the sideline guy and say, thank you. This goes in the file. And you just put it in the file and when you have that meeting, you say, well, you know, here's a list of things. But if you want to talk about the Pac-12, you're dysfunctional and you get run out of the field by Washington State. I mean, if you wanted to, you know, in the dictionary, dysfunction, you got a picture of a cougar. You know, I mean, good Lord, you talk about a football program that's dysfunctional. My goodness. And you're more dysfunctional than Washington State?
I know. Without that game,
the staff just got washed out. I mean,
yeah, you were missing eight coaches from the start of the season in that game because Washington State was down five coaches, their head coach and four assistants, and ASU was down three. So that's the missing coach bowl from last week.
Oh no!
I mean, only in the Pac-12. I mean, only in the Pac-12. I mean, then you lost, you know, Clay Helton. I mean, obviously, when you talk about dysfunction. If you've had to fire back-to-back head coaches, I would go nuts at the fact that that happened at USC. Then they end up firing the next one, so back-to-back-to-back. I mean, that's never happened remotely in college football history during the season, that's happened with three straight coaches. You go to Notre Dame for the third time with an interim coach, it's like, this is crazy world. Not so. I mean, nobody does that. I mean, nobody, ever, anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy. If you did that at one school in the Southeastern Conference, they would fire everybody, all the way to the president, the board of trustees. Everybody would be gone. I mean, nobody would be left. There wouldn't be anybody left to fire anybody because they'd all be gone.
So crazy.
And here's the Pac-12. They just keep moving on like this is normal.
Yeah.
You think, oh my goodness.
Well, I don't know, Dan, if you got to see.
What's so frustrating at USC, the Pac-12? How can you not win the Pac-12 every year at USC? I mean, come on. There shouldn't be any other, bar. The bar should be, we're going to win the Pac-12 every single year. We're USC, and those 11 aren't. And
yeah.
It's that simple. I mean, it's crazy that they're like, well, maybe we can win the Pac-12 South. I don't know. That's nuts.
Now it's maybe make a bowl game, which is crazy too. So Arizona State, just if you know, I mean, yes, they looked good early in the season. They did lose to BYU, which the whole Pac-12 has, and USC is going to have their opportunity the weekend after Thanksgiving. But it's one of the better defenses in the Pac-12. A lot of super seniors, guys coming back. Some big name players. Chase Lucas is, you know, one of the best corners. He didn't have a good game last week, but one of the best guys around. He's a team captain. Merlin Robertson, like, he's a great linebacker. There's a bunch of guys that you would know their names for ASU. Jack Jones, he played at USC. The offensive side's been a little weird. They have a really good run game. White comes back this weekend. Their best running back was out last week against Washington State. But a lot of drops. Jaden Daniels, you could consider one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the Pac-12. He's had some issues just with, like, drops. There's been a lot of penalties. You saw USC get three big plays called back for penalties last week. ASU had the same sort of thing. They're a team that, like, they've made a lot of mistakes, screwed up, shot themselves in the foot, very USC-like. But there's, you know, if ASU comes out and plays well, USC is going to have to play a good game to win this one. But I don't know. I mean, it's just two teams that can be look really good, Dan, or be completely dysfunctional or somewhere in between. So that's why this one's really interesting to me. I mean, does ASU drop a whole bunch of passes and commit a bunch of turnovers and penalties, or do they play a clean game and just blow USC out? Like, I just don't know.
No, USC is capable of almost anywhere on the spectrum. Do they use the Drake London, loss to say, look, the rest of us have to start playing? And is there enough? Is there enough talent? Are there enough, you know, linebackers? Is the secondary as slow as they look sometimes, or are they capable of, you know, actually tackling somebody in the open field or saying with the deep threat and all of that? I mean, I think it's amazing that Arizona came out and instead of doing what Oregon State had done and Stanford done and just running it down USC's throat to some extent, they decided they're going to throw deep and just started throwing over the top. It's like, well, they can't, you know, they can't stop that either. It's amazing. You would love to be in the coach's room when they're putting together the game plan against USC and hear what they're really saying about what they think of the USC team when they break down the film. I find that really instructive as to what do they see and what do they think they can do against USC.
Keely, I don't know how much you got to see of ASU this year.
Too much. That's the problem of covering college football. I don't get to see much college football on the day of, which is unfortunate. But, you know, I think part of this could be a meltdown bowl, like which team just implodes the fastest.
I mean, you could argue both teams are circling the drain.
Yeah, like it could be a meltdown bowl. I mean, it could be USC's defense. I mean, we talked to Todd Orlando this week, and he was talking about situational awareness, having trained eyes, and how that has kind of become a problem now in the second half of the season, where the first half was run defense. But both of those things could come out ahead against this ASU offense, because Jayden Daniels presents a problem, but then also they take pride in the run game. And so USC could get gashed down the middle, and we kind of have a sense of how their defensive line health is looking right now. It's okay, better than it was against Arizona, but still guys are banged up, like Jamar Sakona, Nick Figueroa, stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see, you know. And like I say every podcast, every week, I just don't know what the standard is for this USC team this season. They could come out and play really well. They have a tendency to kind of do that in Tempe, but I just don't know what to expect from this USC team. And also, this USC offense, Drake London was that guy, you know, coming into this season or each game, we were like, okay, it's the Drake London show and a run game that's kind of blossoming a little bit with Keyonte Ingram. But now if you take away Drake London, who's going to step up? You know, we've talked about chemistry issues this whole season with wide receivers. I don't know if anyone's going to really step up in a way that they need to. Shotgun said it on Instant Analysis yesterday, but, you know, it's not going to take one effort. Everyone in that receiving group needs to raise their efforts, and I just don't know if we're going to see that from them at this point of the season, you know. So we'll see, but like I said, I really don't know what to expect from this USC team each week, so we shall see.
I think everybody does.
You know what you would like to see is that they decided, you know, we don't have Drake London, we better be able to run the ball and come out and actually run the ball and believe in the run and you know, prepare to run it. And run it. And then, you know, you set up your play action, you know, the stuff that Clay Helton said 7 years ago he was going to do. You run it, and you run it, and then when you force them to come up and play the run, and then you know, you can throw it, you know, sort of the classic USC style. And maybe that is the kind of thing that focuses their minds this week on, hey, we don't have Drake London. We have to run the football. It's not like, I mean, Keyonte Ingram, he might be the best running back in the league, right? I mean, I think he is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean,
anybody better than he is?
The way he's looked, you know, he could have had over 300 yards without those penalties last week. So, I think if USC has success, it's going to be Keyonte Ingram is a big part of it this weekend. But, yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, hey, why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back, and Dan will let you answer some questions like old times. Is that cool?
Okay.
All right. Back in a minute.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Got a bunch of questions. You want me to start with a voicemail, Keely?
Sure, go for it.
We didn't get to talk much about who the next head coach could be. Dan has, you know, knows the University of Cincinnati well, where this guy Luke Fickell is. This question has something to do with that, so let me play it for you, Dan, and get your thoughts.
Hey, guys. This is Daniel out of L.A. It's been a year, actually, since I've called into the podcast. After everything that's going on with USC, I've been angry for over a year and a half now. And, you know, the old saying, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I have a quick question. Coaching question. Luke Fickell, pretty good coach. Do you think Cincinnati runs the table, go undefeated, and still gets left out of the college football playoff? Could that motivate Luke Fickell to actually leave Cincinnati and come to a Power Five conference just to, you know, beat up on these guys that would not let him in while he was at Cincinnati, just to prove a point and just to get back at them? Could that motivate him, would light a fire under him to actually know that he has to leave Cincinnati, you know, to get to a championship? Because it's got to be kind of heartbreaking or kind of depressing if they do not get into that Final Four after the season they're having. It's like, what else can he do at Cincinnati? You know, what else can he really do? Thanks, guys. Fight on.
I'll give it a shot for Daniel there. He's been gone as long as I have.
Yeah, I was going to say. Probably the last time you were on the show is when he called in.
Cincinnati's in an interesting position. I mean, it's not in their control. Okay, they had a couple of flat spots the last 2 weeks and didn't win with enough style points. But they need Alabama to lose again. And they need Georgia to beat Alabama. And they need Michigan State to beat Ohio State. You get both of those teams with two losses, and that's two teams ahead of Cincinnati who are gone. And Cincinnati has to run the table. And you know, they've got SMU and Houston, where they had a crazy game last week, but neither one of them are too bad. Neither one of them is, those would be pretty good wins for Cincinnati. But if they get cooperation, they might make it in as the fourth team. I think the committee is stuck with, if Oregon doesn't lose, they can't put Oregon behind Ohio State. They can't. They just cannot justify that. The committee knows they'll get ripped up one side and down the other if they do that. I mean, they beat them at Oregon beat them at Ohio State without Oregon's best player, without two of their best players, actually. And so I think the committee is stuck that way. I don't know that I want to see Fickell coming to USC with negative motivation. I think if he wants to come, and it'd be a big adjustment. He and his wife and, you know, his six kids and that, they're Ohio. To see him, you know, obviously Mike Bone, you know, hired him, and to see him come to LA would be an interesting, you know, situation. I mean, if you got six kids though, free tuition for all of them at USC is not a bad deal. No matter how much money you're making, that's a pretty good, if your wife is not sure she wants to come, that would be a fairly good motivator. The oldest son is a freshman offensive lineman at UC. But I think the thing, it would be attractive to me if I were Luke Fickell, I would say, look, I know how to run a program. I'm a tough guy. He has the record for the most starts at nose guard or nose tackle at US or at Ohio State. He is was a great wrestler. He's a tough guy. He's a quiet guy, but he's a tough guy. He's an organized guy. And if you don't have to be a flashy guy, you know, everybody remembers Pete, and Pete was Pete. But if you come to USC with an organized plan, and you really, really work at it, and you know what the heck you're doing, you know how to win football games, you'll be fine. Players will want to come to USC. It's USC. If they win, if USC wins, for example, you've got three of the top five or six high school programs in America in Southern California. I mean, and it's hard to ask kids, let's say at Modern Day, they're going for national championships in high school, and then USC tries to recruit them and said, yeah, we might win the South in the Pac-12 if we get lucky. That's not, you can't do that. They need to say, we won a national championship in high school. We're going to win one in college. And USC has to have that program. If they have that program, however they get that program, the recruiting, I think, in a lot of ways takes care of itself. And they're in the Pac-12. I mean, the right coach at USC ought to be in the playoffs pretty much every year. I mean, you're in the Pac-12. I mean, it's just – so that's – you know, as much as, you know, I've probably created scenarios where it would be good to get out of the Pac-12, especially for the TV money, you know, the one favorable thing is if you run the table in the Pac-12 year after year after year, it's really going to be hard to keep you out of the playoffs. It's going to be hard. As it will be with Oregon this year. Now, obviously, they went and, you know, beat Ohio State. But so I could see Fickell coming, but I would think he would come for the right reasons. And I know people are saying, well, but they're going to go to the Big 12. And I'm just not sure that being in the Big 12 minus Oklahoma and Texas, it's going to be the same thing. It's just not going to be – when you take those two programs out of the Big 12 – you got a lot of small towns and places that just aren't going to move the needle, you know, a great deal. And so I don't know if that's the solution or, you know, for Cincinnati to say, well, now you're going to take us. I don't think so. I mean, I think right now that, you know, the Big 12 is not very well respected. You know, Oklahoma was very much downgraded. And obviously nobody, you know, has much respect for Texas, and they're going to be gone. And it's much like the ACC. Clemson goes down the drain to some extent. Florida State absolutely goes down the drain. And people are saying, you know, why take a team from the ACC? So I think in some ways the Pac-12 is better situated just because they don't have, in those leagues, they don't have a program like USC. If you get USC right, everybody pays attention to you. Everybody looks at you. So I would think that would be the reason he would come, would be because it's USC. And he could be, you know, a dominant college football coach for a very long time if he comes to USC. I think that would be the reason to come to USC. And I would think he's the number one guy on the list. And he has to say no, I think, first. Whether he's going to be in a position to be able to say yes at this point in time as he tries to, you know, get his team to historic, the first group of five team ever to get into the playoffs. I don't know if he can even turn his mind to what might be next, which is one of the reasons I kind of think that Dave Aranda at Baylor might be the leader in the clubhouse, kind of, because he could, I think, afford to at least seriously consider the USC job, and he's a Southern California guy. And so that would be kind of the analysis there with Fickell.
Well, not to use a Clay Helton phrase here, but I'm going to. I feel like Stephen Poway had a crystal ball when he sent in this question, this email. He said, "Dear Ryan and Keeley, I don't have anything to say or ask this week because Dan Weber already wrote the perfect column. USC football fans are too smart for this. He must have bionic eyes because he can apparently see very clearly all the way from Northern Kentucky to LA. Would you be willing to invite Dan onto a podcast to discuss his views, his thesis that it's now basically Aranda or Tucker is perfect? But he said so much more in that column that needs to be discussed and heard. Best, Steve in Poway." So there you go, Steve. We we matched up perfectly. Dan, take it away.
Just the way I told Steve to write it. Okay.
Well, Dan, your thoughts on, I guess, Mel Tucker, yes, since you already covered Aranda?
Yeah, I mean, I just think he's really good. I still remember 2 years ago at the Pac-12, and I always try to, and I mentioned this in the column, I always try to hang out with the new coaches that I don't know at all and haven't ever met. And so, and you get about a half an hour where everybody sort of hangs around, and I couldn't leave. I stayed there for the whole half hour. And I remember fairly quickly asking him, I said, where are you from? And he said, you know, Cleveland. And I said, well, you know, and I knew all the places he'd been, that he'd been with, you know, with Saban, and he'd been at Georgia. I hadn't realized he'd been the interim coach at Jacksonville for one season. I just thought, man, this guy, who would not play for this guy? This guy's got everything you could possibly want. I didn't think he could get it done the way he did at Michigan State this quickly. I mean, he took advantage of the transfer portal and got himself the best running back in the country, maybe. But again, I'm not sure that Michigan is as good as they're ranked, but who do you rank anymore? You really don't know. But that was a great win, for Michigan State. I would think if you were Mel Tucker, you've already moved, 2 years ago, you were 1 year in Colorado, and then you moved to Michigan State. I'm not sure if he's in a position to be able to move. He's making $5.5 million a year. I would think Michigan State would do everything they could to keep him. But you are in Lansing, Michigan, or East Lansing, Michigan. And I don't know if you saw any of the photos of what it looked like after the celebration was over last Saturday night. But it's a place that doesn't look all that good in its best day. And after something like that, it looked just terrible. And even though you beat Michigan, you're probably always going to be the little brother in the state. And if you got a chance to come to USC, I'm thinking you'd have to really think it, through hard. But I'm not sure. Can you win the national championship at Michigan State? If you get in the playoffs, I guess you can. But you would think USC would be significantly more attractive if USC made the case that it matters enough. I think obviously it matters to Michigan State. They've got, the whole Larry Nassar scandal to live down. And I think they decided that, the sports really matter. They obviously invested a lot in the basketball program over the years. And I think they realized that sports matters a great, great deal to their university. Does USC have that same feeling? I mean, does football matter to USC as much? I don't know. I don't think we know. I think right now, the way it's constituted with the current leadership, it does not. USC, I think, in coming up with their next coach, will have to convince the next coach that it really does matter. And I think, I think having to come up with a big-time football coach is probably a good thing for USC right now, because they got to figure out who they are and does this tradition that, goes back to the 1920s and is one of the, three or four, top college football traditions in American, history. Does it still apply? I mean, does it matter to USC or not? I mean, I don't know that. Can you guys say that it does? Do we know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I don't know.
We got a text from Alex from Chicago who said, which is better, hiring a rising, hungry young coach like Dave Aranda of Baylor or a seasoned, quality, established coach like James Franklin? How can USC avoid a Jim Harbaugh or a Chip Kelly situation? Right on, Alex from Chicago.
See, it's so hard to just put out categories like that, because what category was Pete Carroll in? I mean, he was an NFL coach. He probably got treated badly and didn't get a fair shot. But who knew his competitive spirit would show itself in recruiting the way it did? I mean, he wanted to compete so much across the board. I mean, USC didn't have a whole lot going for it then in terms of infrastructure or facilities or anything. And they had Pete was a genius. For example, all the teams in the Pac-12 were starting to build indoor facilities, and Pete, and they would, I still remember there were 2, 3, and 4 pages in the media guides about their new indoor field house, blah, 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 And Pete would look at that and show it to a kid and say, see this? You know why they need that? Because the weather is terrible there. You don't want to go there. It's a place that they got to build a big indoor field house where you can practice, because you can't practice outside. We can practice outside all the time. And he had the ability to turn every situation into his favor. I mean, I don't know that you could ever find another NFL coach who had the exact same experience as Pete had, who could come in and do what Pete did. You could. That person doesn't exist. So when you say, are you going to get a Harbaugh, you know, I mean, Harbaugh's a one-of-a-kind guy. I mean, when you would talk to him when he was playing in the NFL, it was like you were talking to a middle linebacker. He didn't talk or think like a quarterback. I'm not sure that's helping him be a coach. But he was one-of-a-kind. He was just – he's Harbaugh. So it's so hard to know. And there are young, you know, assistants. One of the biggest problems in hiring a young assistant is they've never hired anybody. And so you don't know what kind of a staff are they going to put together. It's going to be people they know, people they've heard, you know, something good about. I mean, it was always the classic problem with as great a guy as I thought he was, Ed Orgeron, when he had those two great coordinators, Aranda one of them and Brady the other, he wins the national championship. He also had great receivers and a great quarterback. But absent that, it's a very difficult thing, you know, for Ed in terms of being a head coach at a place like LSU where they expect you, you know, to be in the running for a national championship every year. And so that's so I don't know. I think it's all about the one guy that you end up with. And I don't think you can ever talk about, you know, this group against that group or whatever. The coaches aren't in groups. I mean, like John McKay, in so many ways, was like the worst possible hire. I mean, my goodness. And he got off to a horrible start. And then all of a sudden, he was, you know, he and Bear Bryant were the two best coaches in the country for years. But you would have never known that. You would have had no reason to know that, even after the first year or two that John McKay spent at USC. It's so tricky. It's why it's the one job that the athletic director has that he has to get right. All the other jobs, you know, they're on the list, but you've got to get that head football coach right. And, you know, I just don't think you can categorize coaches as he's a, you know, up and coming this, or he's a, you know, established that. Yeah. USC's different. It's different coaching at USC. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, not easy.
No, it's funny, Dan. I was doing my, I do Meals on Wheels, like volunteer on Wednesdays, and one of my regulars, Myrna, she has neighbors. Or so she wasn't feeling great. She had a neighbor stop by, this older gentleman. I mean, he might have been in his upper 80s or something, but, you know, doing his walk. And he had this Southern accent. And I think I had like a USCfootball.com shirt on or something. And he had mentioned, oh, USC is like, I did my graduate school there. But I went undergrad to Alabama. And he was like, I had Bear Bryant and then John McKay. He's like, I couldn't do much better than that. It was pretty funny. It was like this old guy. I was like, oh, that's cool. Good for him, you know?
Well, I always think when I got out of college and I got a high school teaching and coaching job, and I said, okay, I got to get ready for this. And I got Bear Bryant's book on coaching. And I still remember, I think it was in the foreword, he said, the most important thing and being a successful college football coach is find a president who likes you and you like him and you can work with. If you don't get the president right, you probably are wasting your time. Uh-huh. And I think that's kind of an issue, you know, with USC. He didn't go back. For example, Bear Bryant was great at Kentucky, and then he went to Texas A&M. He started at Maryland, and people were, you know, well, why don't you go to Alabama? Well, he went to Alabama when Alabama hired the president. There were the other school in Lexington was the private school called Transylvania, and that president was a friend of Bear Bryant's. And Alabama hired that guy to be the president, and that's when Bear Bryant said, you know, I think I'm going to go home to Alabama.
That is so funny.
That's how you do it. You got to feel like, if you're an outside guy looking at the USC job, do you feel like you've got the kind of backing that USC is going to need to get back to where it has to go? I don't know. I mean, these are the people that couldn't let Clay Helton go. you know, how do you now, if you were a, you know, a guy that they're a really top-notch guy that they're trying to, you know, get to come to USC, he would sit there and say, but why did you let Clay Helton go 3 years, 4 years longer than you should have? We all knew that wasn't going to end well. Why did that happen? I mean, how does USC explain that? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's go on. We got another voicemail for you, Coach. I mean, Coach Dan. Sorry, do this for Coach Harvey Hyde.
I play a coach.
You've been a coach, so that's okay. Here's another voicemail.
Hey guys, this question's for Keely and Ryan. And yeah, so basically, my cousin is to Auburn, so we went up and visited her last week. And we went to the Auburn Ole Miss game, and just watching that game live, it really emphasized how far away the USC football team is. I mean, every few series, there was one of those grimace, like, ugh, type hits, you know, like Ray Malaluga back in the day type hits, if y'all, you know, can remember when USC could hit like that. And, you know, I just don't see anybody on USC. Well, not only did they hit, they also wrapped up and made the tackle. So it was just like they were, like, you know, running into people hard. They could also tackle. And then just the level of physicality in that game is just something that I don't see SC being anywhere near. And these aren't even the best teams in the SEC, right? I mean, I guess Auburn is kind of in an upward trajectory under Harsin. I don't know. But, you know, it's so basically, long story short, I just don't see us being anywhere near that. You know, obviously back when I was at USC 2006, 2010, we were like that. But within the last 4 or 5 years, I don't see us being anywhere near that. And that was just pretty eye-opening to me and kind of a reminder of what, you know, physical college football looks like after having watched what you and I and you guys and I have watched at USC the last 5, 6 years. Anyway, spot on, Longhorn Catch. Jason Longhorn Catch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point you bring up. I like that you brought up Auburn because I still remember in 2003 and USC's going down there for the opener and kind of a lot of new guys. And I was hanging out on the corner right down from the stadium on Friday night, Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon. There was a guy who had this orange and blue VW bus with all kinds of Auburn stickers and painting and, you know, slogans and whatever. And I was kind of doing a scene setter piece on what it was like to be in an SEC town the night before a USC football game. And the guy didn't tell me, but as it turned out, the Auburn head coach, after practice on Friday, would drive. He was in a car with the state trooper. The state trooper would drive him home. And that coach is now a senator, Tommy Tuberville. He was the coach at Auburn. And he would always stop and talk to this guy who had been on this street corner for 20 years before every game. And so I'm just standing there listening because I'm thinking, whoa, the Auburn coach is going to be coming. You know, he gets out of the car and he comes up and the guy says, and that was an Auburn team that had like 4 or 5 guys that were really good NFL players, 2 or 3 running backs and a linebacker was a first-round draft pick, and a quarterback who started in the NFL. They were, you know, it was a pretty good team. And Tuberville, you know, he said, come on, coach, we're going to just run right over those guys, right? You know, those pansies from the, you know, West Coast, blah, blah, blah. And Tuberville said, I don't think we can stay with them. He said, they're too quick. They're so quick and tough on defense. He said, I'm just not sure we can block them. And I'm thinking, whoa. And he was right. I think Auburn, I'm trying to think, maybe got across the 50-yard line once, and USC shut him out. And that's who USC, I mean, and the respect that Tuberville had for USC, for that kind of football that USC was playing. And I don't think there's any other kind that USC can play. You've got to be, you know, if you're USC, you've got to be the tough guys on the field. You've got to be the guys that the SEC didn't want to play. I mean, basically after that, you couldn't get anybody in the SEC to play USC. They, you know, they would just, no, we're not going to play you. That's who USC has to be. You're exactly right. That physicality is just so important. And, you know, they've got to respect you. And, you know, obviously that's completely gone by the by the wayside, and it's just it's a crime. I mean, Keeley, I guess we only mentioned that what, like 1,000 times in instant analysis.
just a little bit, just a little bit. I feel like the only guy who might live up to that now is Solomon Tuliala-Pupu, but he's not even fully healthy at this point. I mean, he's on scout team again, messing people up a little bit. He's like the only like really intense scout teamer now, but yeah, the physicality is just, and it's sad because I think that's something that Todd Orlando and Craig Knauber really want to do and instill in this team, but I just think it's a two-way street in that sense sometimes. So yeah, we'll see. Ryan, we actually got an email for you. It's from Bearsecutor, who said, Ryan, too many fans are overlooking the fact that Chris Peterson took a deserving Washington team to a BCF playoff and can recruit in the West Coast. How else do you define success at USC? Franklin, Campbell, and Rule, let alone all other candidates, have not. Not saying he's the best candidate, I'm just saying he has a strong case. He should be on anyone's top three list. He has been a successful head football coach and can develop talent. He knows Pac-12 well and is a brilliant scheme-playing calling coach. Bearsecutor.
Hey, Bearsecutor. I mean, I think he'd be a great candidate, but does he want to coach anymore? He retired from coaching, right? Like, he was doing well and retired. If he wants to come back in, I mean, USC should have looked at him before, and Pat Hayden, we don't even get all that stuff, but if he wants to coach again, and he's someone, the problem is, Bearsecutor, if he wanted to coach and he's the guy, I mean, USC could have hired him a month ago, right? Like, he's not coaching right now. So there's a definitely advantage there. He could have started getting a head start in recruiting and all that stuff and building his staff. And maybe that's the guy and he's doing it behind the scenes, but, you know, and maybe there's reasons not, or maybe he's a backup plan and they're trying to get like a Luke Fickle. And if he doesn't come through, they get him. I don't know, but yeah, I would think he's a good candidate. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
He doesn't quite project the kind of energy on, you know, on TV now that maybe he used to. Like, for example, when you saw Urban Meyer on television, he projected that kind of energy.
He was really good.
I don't see that as much as I admire Bearsecutor. I think for USC people, you're never going to forget the fact that that team that made the playoffs for Washington got their helmets handed to them by USC in Seattle, where USC just took them apart. And that was a Clay Helton USC team that did that. And one of the two best, you know, games that besides the Rose Bowl that Clay Helton ever coached the team. But if we all remember that game where, you know, USC went up there and took it to them. And obviously, I don't think he had a quarterback that, you know, that was good enough and all of that. But I'm just not – I'm not sure I see the fire. I'm not sure you know, it's so hard to recreate, like, the kind of success those guys had at Boise. And, you know, maybe Harsin, you know, at Auburn will be, you know, one of the Boise guys that it can kind of keep it going. But I was never that impressed with I still don't know how Washington got into the playoffs that year. But I'm not sure when you look at the whole field that he's the guy. I'm just not sure. He's kind of set in his ways. I don't know, and I don't want to use this against him because that's what USC used against him when they hired Sark, that they said, well, he won't adjust to L.A. as well. Sark is going to really, you know, do the – he knows L.A., he knows USC, and Peterson doesn't. I don't want to go there, but I'm just not sure that I see Peterson at USC. It doesn't seem as natural a fit to me.
Yeah, I just don't think he's interested in coaching anymore. Yeah. I think that's the issue there.
We'll see.
We shall see. Indeed, we got an email. It's kind of a statement from Keith, who said, hey, gang, wow, there's a theme for this year's Trojans. Make your opponents look great. Why can't they just show up? Except for Keontae Ingram, the dude definitely showed up. He would have had like 250 yards if not for stupid penalties. And heal quickly, Drake London. They win this one, but it's hardly a victory. Keep up the good work, especially Keeley having to wrangle the boys. Keith. So a little statement there from Keith.
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, Dan, I mean, when you look at, you know, Stanford comes into the Coliseum. Would they put up 42 points, most they've scored all season? Oregon State, 45, I think, the most they've scored all season. Utah put up 42. That was the most until they did 44 against UCLA last week. And then Arizona, they were the only team that didn't break the 20-point barrier, and they get 34 against USC, like all in the Coliseum. It does seem like USC's been able to make opponents look great. I don't know. What do you think about Keith's statement?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really wanted to like, you know, Todd Orlando. I really wanted to like Craig. And I mean, I like Vic Soto. And I don't know why it doesn't. I mean, you watch them and you think, are they playing with blinders on? I mean, you see guys running by people. And it's like, where are they going? Or why are they doing that? And it just doesn't seem to go together at all. It doesn't seem sound. And, you know, I don't know if that's a factor in practicing against kind of an air raid offense, you know. And obviously you practice against the scout team as well. Does it make it harder to play really sound, solid kind of, you know, team defense if you can't have those periods where, you know, you have goods against goods, as a departed one like to say. But, I mean, I thought that was the most valuable part of Pete Carroll's practices when they had the ones go against the ones. And maybe it was only for a few minutes. But those guys really competed with one another. And they were competing against kind of stuff that you were going to see kind of week to week. Whereas if your offense is really kind of in its own place, does that change kind of the way the defense approaches things? I don't know. But I would have bet that they would have been more sound than this. And it just don't look sound at all. And I don't know what the explanation is, but you just know that you're looking at a team that doesn't look like it knows how to play defense, and that's not a good thing.
No.
Well, we have one final email, Ryan. I'm not sure if we have any more voicemails.
No more voicemails.
Okay, so we're good. Yeah. Okay, so final one, and it's from Larry, class of 86, who said, I haven't emailed the pod for quite a few years now. Not sure why now is the time to do so, but I find myself watching this Arizona game and have a few questions / comments for you and the crew to ask to see if my assessments of this team are reasonable or just a function of being so fed up with the program for 10 years or so now. So he has a couple of bullet points. I'll read them off. Is it just me, or has USC been much worse than the average school in giving up long touchdown plays for many years now? And related, this team seems to have been terrible at tackling for going on 10 years now. There is no safe win when USC is playing these days. And am I the only person who assumes that there will be an offensive penalty anytime our offense scores on / makes a long play? Final observation, our program has been totally irrelevant nationally and an afterthought in the Pac-12 and threatening to lose relevance in Los Angeles. I've been a fan of USC since 1974, and this is by far the most pessimistic I've felt about the program in those 47 years. Yes, I remember the Hackett years. It'll be years before we're good again. Thanks, Larry, class of 86.
Oh, Larry needs some therapy, Dan. I mean, I'm not saying like just.
Well, I'm not going to be able to. Podcast therapy. I won't be able to give it to him. Larry. I mean, it's just it's hard to, you know, obviously hard to come up with a, you know, a positive take on so much of that. They're just. I mean, you know, you put your finger on a lot of issues that seem to be there and almost without explanation that you know, again, you probably had to do something about this 3 years ago at the very least. And once you let it go for three more years, I mean, this is what you end up with. You know, coaching college football is really hard. There are so many moving pieces. There's so many people involved. And when you don't demand the best of everybody in every place, you know, every day, when you're allowed to slide, when everything's allowed, you know, if the head coach is allowed to slide, everybody's allowed to slide. If the athletic director is allowed to slide because he doesn't know anything about the head coach, you know, if the president is allowed to slide until she no longer can go to the games, I guess, then you got, you know, you got to deal with it. And right now, the only way to deal with it is the kids just aren't able, you know, to compete, and people just stay home. And gosh knows who, how many, I don't know, Ryan, what do you think? How many people were actually in the seats last Saturday?
Yikes.
What do you think, 25,000?
It might have been 30, but it was no way it was over 50. I mean, there was no way.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers.
It's too painful.
It was painful. Yeah. Like they must be reporting the numbers differently than what they used to before. Because we used to see, like, I think they would have paid, you know, tickets, but you still would get reports of like 38,000 or something when, you know, in crappy years. It doesn't matter. Like, no matter how many people show up, it's like the same number. I don't get it. For
That's
attendance,
true.
I mean.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've talked to so many people who just say, I can't put myself through that. It's just too hard. You know, and you can turn the television off, but if you're down there, you know, for the game, it's just, there's just not enough positive coming out of being there. The tailgates, I guess, you know, have changed the way they do it. They're more commercial and not as free and, you know, as they used to be, free and loose and friendly, kind of a family atmosphere. It's more commercial. And then you've got the, you know, and legitimately so, you know, the whole question of, do you really need a DJ with the, you know, the band that Art Bartner built up over 50 years, that kind of thing. I mean, there are just so many things that are probably off-putting. And some of it's not their fault. You know, you got to, you know, you're in L.A., you got the COVID, you know, restrictions and things like that. But, you know, it's just, you know, you can't go on the path that they've been on the last 3 years and expect any better results. You just got to grin and bear it. And finally, they did something about it. We'll see where that ends up. But to ask kids that, you know, have had a model for how they do things for years, I mean, some of these, you know, guys, that's the only thing they know, you know, since high school. And it's probably unfair to ask them to, you know, kind of turn things around. You know, at this point, there's probably no way you can do that. And, you know, somebody needed to turn it around from above, and they did not do that. And this is the result.
Dan Weber, back on the show.
Woohoo!
Yes. We definitely had a lot of requests, like, when are you going to have Dan on? And, you know, Dan moved home. He was, you know, doing his own thing. It was great to get you back doing the columns and stuff this year. So, and, you know, I messaged you about coming on the show, and you were like, yeah, let's do it. So I was very excited about it. So thanks again, Dan.
I will say this. There is a difference. Okay, so I'm going to a big high school playoff game tomorrow night, and I realize it's going to be 27. And that number sticks in my head because the coldest USC game I've ever covered was Friday. Friday night game at Boulder, and it was 27. And that was like USC put that in the notes, like, this is the coldest you know, temperature get a kickoff ever for a USC game. And I'm thinking, that's gonna be my you know, I've got like a month of playoff.
Wow.
Yikes.
Here and I'm thinking, yeah, 27. Okay. Well, been there, done that. At least I won't be at Mile High, I'll be able to breathe a little better.
Yes.
But yeah, I've been at 27 before, and wasn't crazy about it.
Well, all right, Dan. Well, thank you again for coming on. It was great to catch up and chat with you. I know, Keely, you were very giddy about it. So.
Yeah, I was giddy this whole pod, if you couldn't tell.
But thanks so much, Dan.
Yeah, that was great. No, thanks for asking. It was fun. I still watch them, you know, every weekend, and you do get a different perspective when you're watching three or four or five games at once, or eight or nine games all day, and it's probably not a great perspective when you're switching back and forth. Hopefully, better days are ahead.
Yeah,
it's still USC, and. In so many ways, there's nothing like USC. That's what's frustrating, I think, is the ability. So many schools can't, or programs can't be USC no matter what they do, no matter how many things they do right. But USC can. USC can be really special. And they just got to, you know, make that decision that you're going to be special. You're going to be USC again. Yeah. And we'll see. They got a chance, but.
We will see. All right. Well, Dan, thanks again. You can check out his work every Sunday night. We'll post a column from Dan throughout the season. So thanks again, Dan Weber. Thanks to Keely Yore.
And let me thank everybody for, you know, reading it and responding to it. I've been very positively. I mean, I didn't know, and I told you, Ryan, this the other day. I didn't realize there were that many people who still cared. And when you read, when you see what people were, you know, responding and how they're responding, there's still an awful lot of people who really care, really care. I mean, you know, there's a chance by now that everybody would kind of have drifted off. But there are a lot of people that really care, and that's pretty cool. I'm glad to see that.
All right. Well, Dan, we're glad to see you here on the show again, and hopefully get to have you on somewhere down the road. For Keely Yore and Dan Weber, I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever, and this time it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars, new season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.